Welcome back to the show. Today, the show was brought to you by twc.health/final shot. You go to the website, you make a purchase, get yourself some spike support, save yourself some headaches from the spike protein, get it out of your system, and you'll save some money on your purchase. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're on Rumble, not on YouTube because I'm not allowed on there anymore, my guest today is Dr. Robert Seek. He is the chief of integrated therapeutics for the wellness company. Sir, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for showing up and taking the time to talk to me. Now, I'm going to let you kind of introduce yourself and go down a list of accolades and what exactly you do for the wellness company.
Well, I'm an independent pharmacy owner here in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm a pharmacist, so it's PharmD, so doctor of pharmacy. I'm also a fellow in metabolic and nutritional medicine. I spent over 10 years in the pharmaceutical industry managing clinical trials. I carried the bag in sales before that. So I've seen both sides, most especially the dark side of the pharmaceutical industry. And I didn't plan on being an independent pharmacy owner, but it kind of worked out that way. Most of what I do is compounding. We have to make the stuff in a laboratory. I'm really involved in a lot of hormone replacement therapy. And I do other unique things too that just are prescription drugs not available commercially. I live in Nevada. We have Area 51. We have a lot of Department of Energy guys that have toxicities and exposure illnesses, so I can make special things for them. And I got hooked up with the wellness company, just a bunch of like-minded people, the physicians, other pharmacists who said, you know, when the country and chain drugstores like CVS and Walgreens during COVID said, oh, we're not going to dispense hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin. And the FDA is calling ivermectin, oh, nothing but horse paste, please don't do that. And show that it was very effective treatment for COVID, especially with early intervention, you know, much more so than Paxlovid, which is another drug they make a lot of money off of, the chain drugstores. We're just like-minded in our approach that, hey, give patients freedom, give doctors freedom for what is right, not just drive a corporate agenda. And then let's integrate, hence my title, let's integrate the best combination of lifestyle modifications. Let's talk about getting healthier. You know, 50% of the United States is overweight. 30% is obese, not just overweight, but obese. And let's talk about some strategies where we integrate a lot of nutritional supplements, which the wellness company has and sells. And that's kind of the crux of how I became the chief of integrated therapeutics here. We combine both sides of medicine to help people get healthy, stay healthy, and prevent disease.
Well, you said you're into hormone replacement therapy. That's testosterone replacement therapy. Testosterone replacement therapy, which I'm an advocate for that. I have TRT. Tell us a little bit about testosterone replacement therapy, just so if there's people out there that are wondering about it, somebody smarter than me can tell them.
Okay. A great resource to look at, which is a clinical resource. It's a doctor's lecture. The doctor's name is Rebecca Glaser, G-L-A-S-E-R. It is a lecture to physicians, but it's excellent for people to listen to. It's called Testosterone Decline and Aging. And testosterone is crucially important for both the man and the woman. And take a look at this. 30 years ago, the high end of the normal range for testosterone in men was 1200 in the United States. It's now 900. As a society, over 30 years, we've shifted downward. Average sperm count in men used to be 150 million per cc. 30 years later, it's 75 million per cc. And there's all kind of other markers. I think in a number of ways, we're being poisoned by our foods. Electromagnetic field poisoning is a real thing. 21st century living, you know, working yourself stressed to death also has an impact too. And here's what happens when testosterone declines in both sexes, men and women. You start to lose bone, you become depressed, you lose muscle mass, you lose strength, okay? You lose drive, you lose willingness and drive. And those are just a few of the things. Now, those things you can feel. What you can't feel is patients with low testosterone have a much greater risk of having diabetes. They have cholesterol problems, early onset disease, skin starts to get thinner. So I used to present to physicians who were new to learning about hormone replacement therapy a slide, actually two slides. I'd have two columns on each side and say, look at the symptoms of this disease. I haven't told you what the disease is yet, but look at all the symptoms. We've got depression, anxiety, insomnia, bone loss, muscle. And if you're a group of pharmaceutical executives, you're just adding it up. Wow, this one disease is awesome. We can sell six or eight different drugs for it. And those symptoms are only due to low testosterone. Then you add on to that libido in both men and women, erectile function in men. So I'm a big advocate of keeping your testosterone level at the high end of normal the normal range. I love to see guys at a total 800 to 1200. More is just better. You got to modulate it. Watch your estrogen. Guys, you got to take your zinc for sure. But don't forget the women. There's a lot of perimenopausal women. So before they go into full menopause, or even women as early as age 35, they start to lose testosterone. They get a little bit of testosterone replacement, because at any time in a young woman's life, she has 10 times more testosterone in her body than she does estrogen. Most people don't realize that. Now, a man is going to have, a healthy young male is going to have 10 times the amount of testosterone of a healthy young woman, right? But a woman has so much more testosterone. And without that testosterone, body gets a little softer, start to accumulate fat mass, skin gets thinner, muscles aren't as strong, they're not as firm. So, I mean, that's quality of life to me. And I'll give you one last point. If we had, of all the things in science we have to measure that correspond to longevity in men, well, who's going to live the longest? Do we measure blood pressure? Do we measure cholesterol? What do we measure that tells us this one thing is really important for longevity? And there's several factors, but the most important factor in men under 80 that corresponds to longevity, what is their total testosterone level? Now, over 80, it's not the testosterone level anymore, didn't become the number one factor. It's the amount of muscle mass. Call that resilience. Frailty syndrome is a real thing. And what's the best thing you can do to get muscle mass? Testosterone and weight-bearing exercise. You got to move iron. So as you can tell, I'm a big advocate for keeping one's testosterone level super healthy.
Yeah, I definitely feel much better now that I've been doing. I've been on TRT for, I think, 4 years now. I didn't at the time notice how bad it was. But once it starts pumping through your system and your levels get back up to where they're supposed to be, you kind of look back and like, oh, man, that was bad.
Yeah, you feel like $1 million. If your testosterone level's low and it was low for like 5 years and you forgot what it was like and you're just thinking, you know, at 40 years old, right? You're just thinking, gosh, I'm just not 25 anymore. Am I meant to fall apart? No, you're not. Work out, get your testosterone level up. And then all of a sudden you're like, I feel like $1 million. I can still do stuff the 25-year-olds can do. Maybe not as long. That's what I noticed. I'm 52.
Yeah.
Hey, I can do this stuff. I still got explosive power. I love it. But you know what? I'm probably not going to be running a marathon anytime soon. And that's for the birds anyway. So, but I feel pretty good at my age.
Fantastic. So last week I talked to Dr. Mackus, one of the other doctors with the wellness company. He kind of scared the crap out of me a little bit. Just some of the information you dropped kind of blew my mind. And then I got hooked up with you this week. Now, the big trigger word that came through on your little list of stuff was ivermectin. That seemed to have been a trigger word for the federal government here and just mainstream media, anything like that. Ivermectin was a massive trigger word. Why?
Well, let me draw a long arc for you. And I'm going to draw it because maybe no one has ever done this on your show because they didn't work in the pharmaceutical industry. I did my MBA in 2003. And what it was all about, a book I never published but wrote, was, well, in 2010, 18 of the top 20 selling small molecule drugs of all time would be off patent. Small molecule drugs means it's small enough you can swallow and get it into the bloodstream. Bigger molecules you have to inject under the skin, you know, stuff like that. Like we have all these peptide drugs. And the drug industry is going to have to replace that revenue. They're not responsible to the American public for maintaining health. They're responsible to shareholders. And they would have to find something. And my prediction in my book is, well, we're going to have a class of drugs called the immune response modifiers. And looks what's advertised. And I don't watch streaming services, but people tell me they see ads for drugs like Cosentyx and Enbrel and Humira. And these are drugs that are $1,500 to $2,500 a month. The companies are making gazillions of dollars now on things like Ozempic and Wegovy and things like that for weight loss and diabetes. But the industry would have to replace the revenue also with vaccines. Now, I really underestimated in 2003 when I wrote my book how strong the vaccine push would be. Like, okay, we got the HPV vaccine. Oh, now we're going to try to expand it and make sure that not just women, but men get the HPV vaccine. But this COVID vaccine was a complete scam because here's the thing. Those vaccines did not make it to human trials. They didn't meet the criteria, which I can talk about later. But the drug industry needed these vaccines on the market, and they needed out of the way any effective treatment because this was emergency use authorization in the United States. It wasn't, well, these drugs were clinically studied, which means in people, and proven to work. So they're FDA approved, because ivermectin is not FDA approved for COVID, neither is hydroxychloroquine, but they both work. And that's documented in scientific literature. It's just, well, what does the FDA approve? Well, when you do a study and pay the FDA, look, we've done this study, we paid a lot of money, here's your fee, here's your millions of dollar fee. Will you guys pass it through your review board and say that we get approval for our drug to go out there and market and say, this is good for COVID? Well, they never did that because ivermectin has long been off patent. So you have a drug that people vilified, but why? It's been on the market for nearly 60 years. It's been used in the very young and the very old with an excellent safety profile. And that is shown in any country that keeps an adverse drug event reporting database. Four men shared the Nobel Prize in Science and Medicine in 2015 for their work on ivermectin in humans. Then all of a sudden it's, we can't use that drug for COVID. It was crap to make way for the vaccines because that would threaten the pharmaceutical industry's big revenue stream that would come in, paid for by our governments, by stealing tax dollars from citizens, taxation is theft, and saying, well, we're covering this. Yeah, we're paying $200-$300 a dose, and we're gonna set you up with all these boosters. And the drug companies made billions, but they wouldn't have made billions if the awareness for hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin was widespread and those drugs were used as frontline therapy.
Wow. So what part of I don't know what ivermectin is. As far as I know, it's a dewormer. Would I be correct in saying that?
That's originally what it was approved for. And why does it work? Because it has a mechanism by which, you know, the organism, the parasite is forming, that it breaks down the structures that form its body. Okay. And that's one of the main mechanisms. Breaks down the structures. You can't replicate the structure, can't survive. Okay. We've also found, as Dr. William Mackus has pointed out, I'm sure he talked about on your show, well, ivermectin has multiple mechanisms by which it fights cancer. And one of the mechanisms against solid tumor cancers is what? It breaks down what we call the microtubules that tumors need in order to form a structure, like a scaffolding or like the framework of a house. You need those. Ivermectin breaks that down. But ivermectin has other far-reaching properties too. It reduces inflammation. So there's a really interesting book. I don't remember the author's name, but the book is called Parasites, The Enemy Within. Now, it was written by someone I think is trained primarily as a naturopathic doctor. So Western medicine is going to say, well, you know, this is just garbage. But the author goes through how parasitic origin of many diseases is a real thing. And when you start to treat the parasites and notice that mysterious ailments that you really couldn't find any fix for, other than prescribing drugs to handle some of the symptoms, maybe, start to get better. One of them is the fact that, as Mac has pointed out, ivermectin works against solid tumor cancers. We dose it a little bit higher than we do in COVID, and we're going to find this. You look up a guy named Joe Tippins. So he actually recommends a drug called fenbendazole. Now, it's not approved for use in humans, but plenty of humans have used it. Tippins protocol, also for cancer. I've seen doctors write prescriptions to my pharmacy for ivermectin, and they dose it in the cancer range. And they've also told the patient to go get the fenbendazole. And they ask me, can you get it? Can you sell it? I'm like, no, I can't touch it. It's not approved for use in humans, but just go to Amazon and order Panacure C, the dewormer for dogs. And it takes me back to that book. It's a short read. Parasites, the Enemy Within. How many diseases are actually of these micro parasites in origin that nobody tests for, that some people say are getting better because they're taking these antiparasitics? And I got a couple of stories for you if you want to hear them, but tell me what you think so far.
Let's hear the stories.
Well, here's the best one.
Okay.
I've got a group of people I'm connected to on Telegram, right? And they know me only by my screen name. But then some of them had mentioned in the channel, hey, they're sick and they don't know where to get ivermectin. They're up in Reno, Nevada. I'm in Las Vegas. And I said, hey, you got to go to the wellness company website, get a telemedicine consult. They got the doctors there that'll treat you. Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine are both. And whole families were sick, right? So then I got a call from the practitioner and said, can you dose the ivermectin in the kids? Yeah, we can dose it. We make little chewable tablets for them, or we make a suspension. So this whole family of four got it. Now, what I didn't know at the time is that the three-year-old boy, okay, the mom told me later, and she's coming to Vegas to visit. I'm going to actually meet with her in person for the first time pretty soon. This is going to be great. Cool. And she said to me, that her boy just refused to cuddle up next to her or the husband, wouldn't let them read books, was always combative, fighting, bad move, bad mood, upset all the time. Started taking ivermectin, and she noticed after 3 or 4 days, worms were coming out in his diaper, in his stool. So she called me and wanted me to call the doctor and said, what do I do? I said, what I would advise is ask the doctor. What I would say is stay on ivermectin for a long period of time. Stay on ivermectin until at least you stop seeing worms.
Yeah.
So this went on for 2 weeks. It was a 10-day course of ivermectin, but we upped it so the kid had 30-day supply and then a refill. But after 2 weeks, okay, the worms stopped after about 10 days. And after 2 weeks, the kid grabbed a book, went to the couch where his mom and dad were sitting together, got in between them, and spoke. They hardly heard the kid speak words and said, will you read me this story? They read him the story, and at the end, they said, the boy said, I love you. She calls me crying. She says, you changed our lives. Back to that textbook about diseases of parasitic origin. How many cases like this do we have where the unknown culprit are one or more parasites? And look what a magic ivermectin. Yeah, the COVID got better quickly. I've had people tell me too that were, you know, ridiculed me 2 years ago. Should I really take this? I have a supply at home and I'm sick right now. I'm like, yeah. And in 48 hours, they're like, I'm symptom free. I guess I never was sick. No, you were sick. You took it and it works. And there you go.
So when you kind of run down the list of what that child was experiencing and the behavior towards the parents, the first thing that I think of would be autism.
It could be, you know, there's many things that can lead to that. So autism, you know, these kids are on the spectrum. And what can cause that? Here's what's in the medical literature. Heavy metal toxicity, aluminum. Okay, that's one thing. Kids who get a lot of vaccines, especially when the vaccines are combined with Tylenol, the drug acetaminophen, because they get a fever afterwards, okay? They have a potent inflammatory reaction, so their brain is on fire. There's also links to kids that become very sensitive to dairy. They become sensitive to dairy, but they still get dairy, right? They're very mucousy, the sinus congestion, they have mucus in their stool. But when they have that antibody to the milk protein, casein, which is 16 times larger than any protein in human breast milk, and they develop an antibody which knocks that out, knocks out the casein, they also develop an antibody that stops transport of folic acid into the brain. It's called that cerebral folate uptake because it knocks out the receptor. The antibody knocks out the receptor because it looks really similar to casein, right? We call that molecular mimicry. And then these kids don't make neurotransmitters properly. So I can tell you that the different mechanisms I've seen the functional-minded practitioners approach autism incorporates all of that. But not until this case did I ever hear of a doctor who thought of, well, let's go to parasites first. Let's see if the kid has a parasitic infection. And the doctor didn't even think about it either. It's just one of those miracles that happened that was unexpected.
That's wild.
Yeah.
So ivermectin on the pay scale of what ivermectin is very cheap.
Well, let's say a course of Paxlovid is probably retail price $200 to $300 here in the United States. Course of ivermectin when I compound it, right? So that means I make the capsules different strengths in my laboratory. So a course of that for 10 days is going to be maximum $75. Okay. So compare that to $236 or $300 for the Paxlovid, right? And Paxlovid has a rebound phenomenon. It's a drug that didn't make it through clinical trials for other viral diseases, but let's slap emergency use authorization on this thing and let's actually sell it because we spent all this money as the drug company researching it. So let's put lipstick on a pig, get emergency use authorization, because this way we don't have to prove efficacy or safety to the FDA. We can just say it works and say, wow, it's an emergency. We got to use this drug. And it got so bad to the point where, you know, even with my own profession, pharmacists were denying the filling of prescriptions for hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. That is the practice of medicine. Denying a therapy is the same as prescribing a therapy. That is the practice of medicine. So you show up to a pharmacy with a prescription for ivermectin. They have it. And then they ask you, is this for COVID? Yeah, I'm not going to allow this. That pharmacist didn't lay their hands on the patient, diagnose the patient. That pharmacist is not taking the risk that the doctor is for prescribing what is the right medication, but denying the treatment should put risk on the pharmacist and liability if that patient didn't get any better. But even in some states, think it was 15 states in the country said, oh, you know what? The pharmacists were allowed to say at the prescription counter, but I will write for you Paxlovid. I have authorization by my governor that I can change that. And who makes the money from that? The drug company made the money. So swapped out ivermectin to make the money on the Paxlovid, which is criminal.
So just for folks, if they want to go out there and do some reading, is there any studies on ivermectin to help with COVID?
Many. Okay. You can go to PubMed.com and just type ivermectin and COVID. You can go to do the same thing with hydroxychloroquine and COVID, or even better, there's a couple sites that have organized the studies. IVM Meta, M-E-T-A, so two M's in that, .com, IVMmeta.com, and the other one is HCQmeta.com. And the reason why that term is used, a meta-analysis is a very powerful way to display what the data is related to a drug. If you do a one-off study and have a small group of patients and say, look, they got better. Okay, that's one study. But it's much more powerful when you have a multitude of studies that all show the same thing. Well, this study showed it worked, and this study showed it worked, and this showed it worked, and this one. We call that a meta-analysis when we kind of look down at all of them. We stack up these clinical trials and say, well, they're all saying the same thing. That's why I like those two sites, because there's a multitude of studies for each of the two drugs on their effectiveness for COVID.
Wow. So let's say you work for Pfizer or Moderna, which you don't. We'll just make that very clear. When it comes to manufacturing a vaccine, what is the time frame from start to being able to go onto the market?
It's a long time. I'm not familiar enough with the manufacturing of vaccines, but it is, and when they would get to market. It's at least 5 years. It's at least 5 years for any drug, including a vaccine. And here's what's crucial to know about vaccines, because I said this to my classmates and colleagues. I mean, I became a pariah amongst all of them. And these are my classmates from pharmacy school and also my my mates that I used to work with in the drug industry. Like, what's wrong with you? You're an advocate. You're against these vaccines. I said, well, first of all, you have to figure for COVID, you have a virus with an infection fatality rate of only 0.4% untreated. So why the rush to the vaccines? And when you take out morbidly obese, 65-year-old and older, diabetic indoor dwellers, the infection fatality rate was lower. But the vaccines had never made it to human clinical trials. They paused. So this would have been a longer arc for these vaccines to make it. And why? In order to move from preclinical trials to clinical trials, so that's a fancy way of saying from animal studies to human studies, preclinical to clinical, vaccines have to meet two out of two criteria. They have to, one, show a benefit. Two, don't show harm. Okay, preclinical studies. First one was in mice. Mice typically live 3 years. All the mice were dead within 3 months. Second study was in ferrets. Ferrets live 13 years. All the ferrets were dead within 3 years. Third study in chimpanzees. Chimpanzees live 40 to 45 years. They were all dead within five. All animals died of severe respiratory illness or embolic events. They tossed clots, pulmonary embolism, stroke, heart attack. Okay. They only autopsied the chimpanzees, by the way. And Dr. Mackus would know this. And they found that 100% of the chimpanzees had started to develop fast-growing cancers. So no, these drugs never made it to human clinical trials because they didn't meet those two crucial hurdles. But again, drug companies got to jam this in to make money and generate revenue. Gosh, so get the emergency use authorization, which is not approval because they didn't meet the standard for approval. And here we are. It sounds sinister and people call me the conspiracy theorist. I'm like, you know what? Facts are stubborn things. And these are the facts. So whether you call it truthful or not truthful, or this was by design by the drug company, you know, that's up to you. But those are the facts.
Well, by design by somebody, who knows who it was. It could have been the person that backs the drug company. It could have been what the World Economic Forum, who probably has shares in Pfizer or Moderna or even own them. But when you kind of look at what happened, there, we don't know. Well, at first they said, we don't know how this happened. Then it comes out, well, maybe it was from bats, which is absolutely ridiculous. And then now they're kind of warming up to the situation that it was a lab leak. I'm kind of more on the side that it was released. And it's a multi-billion dollar industry.
Well, there's a really good investigative reporter for those who want to dig deep on the origins of the COVID. And there's several that have come out. There's Karen Kingston, but I follow a guy named George Webb, W-E-B-B. George is probably pointed in the right directions. And when you scan all of the material, which is voluminous and detailed, that George Webb has published over the last 2 years, you find connected DARPA, U.S. AMRID, you know, U.S. Army Medical Research Institute for Infectious Disease. You find Moderna, Pfizer, Erasmus Labs. They're all there. Yes, you find that there are patents that are held on the vaccines. And actually, some of the benefit goes to the CDC, goes to the U.S. government, right? So was it released? Seems to me that it was. And I've had this discussion with physicians, like, that's like a bioweapon. I just don't believe that. I'm like, I know it's hard for you to, because you're a good thinking human being and wants to help people. But there are sinister individuals in the world who think that, well, I have multiple objectives by rolling out this vaccine. One, I want to ruin economies and take over countries with my big investment firms. I do want to depopulate the world because we don't want too many people to rise up against us. And you know, while we're doing it, if those two things don't work, at least we're going to make a whole ton of money. You got to think like a sinister, evil orchestrator of some of this stuff to really get it. And I've had people look at me with strange faces and say, that's just not reality. I don't believe it. No, because you don't operate that way. You don't think that way. Because you're a good-hearted human being doesn't mean that there aren't people who are absolutely that sinister, and I firmly believe that there are.
Well, there's Hollywood movies made about stuff like this, so it's 100% it can happen, and it is happening. You think the character, the Joker, just came out of just out of thin air? Somebody had to think of that.
So, the anarchist Joker, the Heath Ledger Joker, I think was the most sinister. Although I think the Jack Nicholson version was the most entertaining, but Heath Ledger as the anarchist Joker, that was the most disturbing.
Very disturbing that it could even be thought up.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jack Nicholson, even when he played the Joker in that 1989 version of Batman, he had some mental health issues after doing that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he wasn't well after he played that character, and we look at Heath Ledger, it didn't go too well.
Ooh, yeah, that's true too. Because that one was, I mean, you had to dive deep into a character. I guess I'm not an actor, but I guess to immerse yourself into a character, it's kind of hard to not take on some of those attributes.
Well, I would think you would kind of live that way for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
You would live in that headspace, and that would have, I don't know if I could do that.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense to me. So, yeah, it was a bad, it was a loss, Heath Ledger. It was too bad.
So tell me what acute COVID is.
So acute COVID, you know, what's interesting, when COVID first came out and talking with some friends of mine who are in the medical community, in the military, the Navy. And they said to them, it had a lot of resemblance to radiation sickness, radiation poisoning. Now, I think we talked a little bit right before the show started, you know, some of the special things I do, maybe it was on the show. Gosh, it's been so long now, all 30 minutes. I do some stuff for Department of Energy guys, the blue collar workers that are underground, Area 51, S1, S4, all that. And they power all that stuff with nuclear reactors. And there's different things that we need to do to get rid of the beryllium out of their body. But a lot of them have lung issues, and some of them are because they're exposed to the silica, the fiberglass insulation. If they're older, the insulation on the reactors and other parts was asbestos. And then you have some of this radiation toxicity, which is unexplainable. Like, why do people have difficulty breathing? They may or may not present with a fever, but it clearly looks like a respiratory illness. So that's one thing. But let's just talk pure COVID now. You get a virus. The typical pathology, and there's been variants and they all behave a little bit different way, is people start to get a sore throat or they get some nasal and sinus stuff, okay? And that's like a virus reservoir where it first attaches, you know, you breathe it in somehow, it's in your mucous membranes. It goes there, it starts to incubate before it goes wild and out into the rest of the body. And what is it doing? Your immune system cranks up, says, I don't know what this is. I haven't developed specific immunity yet, but I'm going to make the body a more difficult place for this virus to survive. So it cranks up the heat. That's why you get a fever, yeah. Right? If you get a lot of inflammation in the lungs, and that was the big driver, right? You take this beach ball, which is what the COVID looks like under a microscope, and stick a bunch of different things on it. Those were the spikes, and some of them were the actual spike protein. Okay, and if I get this thing to replicate like viruses do, then I have this spike protein that's like an ice pick to every tissue that it touches. And a very sensitive tissue is the lung tissue. And when the lungs become inflamed, you have difficulty breathing, wheezing, which is why budesonide works so very well. But you need to stop the virus from replicating. So it's like a really bad, nasty flu, no more lethal than the flu, by the way. But of course, the fear-driven mechanism was, gosh, I got to get treated for COVID, which I'm an advocate of course, and like, don't be sick. And especially the older you are and the more COVID becomes just the acute COVID with this initial onset, and then it can hang around for a while. Lungs are getting damaged, you know, you're losing body mass, you're not hydrating, you're losing nutrients. And then some people would become long COVID sufferers, yeah, because if they have resident spike protein from the virus replicating, they have it hanging around for a long time, either from COVID or when they got the mRNA shot, their body now makes spike protein, right? That spike protein is causing damage everywhere it goes, and it's the primary target we shoot at. Okay, with all the therapeutics that we integrate in our approach, is to neutralize the spike protein because it's so damaging and anti-inflammatory. This is, come back to ivermectin. Ivermectin is a primary neutralizer of the spike protein and quells that inflammation, in addition to all the other mechanisms it has to reduce the viral load.
Basically, from talking to yourself and Dr. Makis, the spike protein seems to be the problem.
The spike protein is the problem. I've said it on other shows. You're already kicked off of YouTube. So if I say, you know, the spike protein is the bioweapon, we're not going to get kicked off of YouTube, but that's a fact. The spike protein is the bioweapon. And you know, I'll tell you another story, right? So good friend of mine from the drug industry days is now a regional manager with a big drug company traveling. And he told me after his second episode that he had passed out a couple times and felt really weak, fatigued. Okay. And you know, he's my age, a couple years younger actually. And he said, I don't understand what's going on. Now his wife is a nurse practitioner, a know-it-all nurse practitioner, okay, and says, he had to get vaccinated because you have to travel and your company made you, right? And he's passing out. He says, what do you think is going on? I'm so short of breath. And my ejection fraction out of my heart is like 36%. Normally out of your left ventricle, it's about 65%. Really good athletes might be 68% of the volume in there gets pushed into your aorta and that drives. But when it's down into that range, you can't get off the couch, let alone exercise. And I said, look, just I'll send it to you. But dude, you're gonna pay, right? Because you laughed at me for doing this stuff, but get an appointment, get ivermectin. He did. And within 7 days, he felt a lot better. He did take ivermectin for 2 weeks, did have another set of diagnostics for his heart condition. He was back up to 65%. Wow. And he's back to bodybuilding again. And his wife laughs at him, said, do you really think the ivermectin did that? I'm like, listen, I manage clinical trials, but there's something called the obviousness test. You were sick. You weren't getting better. You were passing out. You started ivermectin because he probably had myocarditis or pericarditis. That's what was reducing his ejection fraction. Dr. McCullough can talk, you know, in great detail to that, but I saw it simply. This neutralized inflammation, you're lucky that your heart recovered and you feel good now. And that only happened after you took ivermectin. Hey, that's the obviousness test to me. It worked.
Wasn't her cooking, huh?
I don't know if she cooks. She works too, but I mean, yeah. I'm on the carnivore diet right now. I'm trying that out.
How do you like it? I've done it.
I like it. You know, here's my rule on that, right? I could already tell early into it, like, yeah, I love cooking steaks, right? And it was eggs and steaks for me. And I thought, well, I'm not going to be able to do every meal like this, but I went the first week straight and I dropped about 5 pounds right around my waist.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? If I go 5 out of 7 meals that I have that are carnivore, I always have a ketogenic breakfast. Always, always, always. There's no toast. There's no fruits. There's no cereal. Ketogenic breakfast. And I can be liberal with other stuff. This way I can go out with friends and take my wife out and it's cool. And it worked. What I did notice is the first few days, my endurance was gone. Yeah. I still had good strength, but my endurance was gone. I know what that is. I'm getting out of my glycolytic metabolism, learning how to break down glucose for energy and shifting over to burning fats and ketones. Brain focus was good, but my athletic endurance was, it was terrible. And a week later, okay, I feel just like I normally felt. And I didn't do it to lose weight necessarily. I just want to see if I can. And I like cooking steaks. I use the Joe Rogan reverse sear method. I turned my wife, who was a vegan when I met her, into a carnivore. Proud of that. So I grew up on a farm in Pennsylvania raising cows. So I'm like, yeah, you know, this vegan stuff. Well, there's just so much waste in commercial agriculture. I respect that. So why don't we buy from a farm co-op?
Yep.
The cows live a great life, except for one bad day. And you need it because the Best of Rob Seek show is over after about two dates. So I'm like, hey, let me take a look at your blood labs. And she was fatigued and her ferritin, B12 were low. I'm like, you need to eat meat. And here we are 14 years later.
Okay. Here's a selfish question for you then. I know a gentleman, 69, 70 years old, his whole life worked out fantastic shape, six pack right up into mid 60s. Decided he was going to switch from eating a regular diet of meat, pasta, breads, and whatnot, switching over to a whole foods vegetarian diet. Lost, I know that was my reaction too. Lost a ton of weight, went from about 165 pounds to 144 pounds. Looks gaunt, muscle mass was basically gone. Swears he feels fantastic. But at 70 years old, when you've depleted your muscle mass, your bone density is probably through the hoop, and you got nothing to you.
Resilience, no reserve. That's the first thing I think of. Remember what we said earlier in the show? Gosh, you know, the number one thing that corresponds to longevity after 80 that we measure, right, with numbers, is the amount of muscle mass on a male body. So you take a guy who's frail with no muscle mass, and he gets a pneumonia during the winter, they're done. They have a high degree of likelihood of dying. And the vegan diet, you know, I'll do some consults for patients. I work with a lot of doctors. I used to lecture with a group called A4M, American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. And I'll take on consulting clients to train doctors to say, I want to learn all this functional medicine stuff. I want to learn TRT and I want to learn functional medicine. You got to combine the two. You got to integrate them. And I'll say, listen, the only cases I won't take on are vegan cases. Like, why not? Like, I can't help them. Like, well, they say they eat so many grams of protein. Okay. Most vegan diets use a lot of grains. Grains are nutrient robbing to the body. There's some benefits in the fiber, but you can very easily overdo the grains that a lot of vegan foods are made from. And now they're sticking the bug stuff in the foods, right? And that steals nutrients from your body. So now you're going to deplete your nutrients. Okay, great. You can take a plant, and if I analyzed it using the scientific tools like, you know, gas chromatography and mass spectroscopy, I can tell you, well, these vitamins are in here, and this, I can use this technology to measure how much protein is in this plant, and these plants are awesome. Humans aren't set up to absorb the protein from plants efficiently. Cows are, which is why they have four stomachs, okay, to die, and they chew all day. And people say, what about gorillas? Gorillas are just massively, yeah, they're 400 pounds, but the gorillas eat 50 pounds of food a day. So for a human that weighed 200 pounds, that would be, you got to eat 25 pounds of vegetable material per day. Who has time for that? Gorillas have a different makeup of how acidic different components of their digestive system are to absorb the protein from plants. Their heads are huge because they're chewing all day. Humans aren't set up to do it. We're set up to be omnivores. And one more thing I'll say is, people say, well, when I went on a vegan diet, I felt great. I find a lot of people say that and they feel great for 3 to 6 months. Why? If you were eating toxic meat, if you weren't eating organic pasture raised beef and grass finished, if you weren't eating high quality eggs, poultry that are again pasture raised, if the quality of your food was low, you're getting a microdose of toxins every time. Sure, you're going to feel better when you detoxify. And I think there's value, you know, to dark green leafy vegetables, right? But, you know, one of the things people point out to me about vegan diet, I eat plenty of protein. Yeah, but you're losing muscle mass. And yep. We need more protein per pound of body weight as we age than we do less. And I'll give you a supplement trick.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So a couple of uncles in their 80s, back home, one in Pennsylvania, one in Florida, both got sick with COVID. I got them TWC doctor telemed appointments, got their COVID stuff, got over it. One was a long hauler at the time. A TWC doc took him on right away, got him over his long haul COVID because we put him on long-term ivermectin. And I just said to him, I said, you know, you're pretty fit. You're 83 and you walk. I said, but do you want to just be healthy? You want to be a badass? He's like, what? He said, well, I want to be a badass. I said, okay, here's what I'm going to have you do. You need muscle mass. Walking doesn't do it. I want you to just get up out of your chair and start with 10 body weight squats a day. I've got him up to 150 a day now.
Wow.
Okay. I want you to lean against your kitchen counter and do push-ups, or on the floor, do push-ups from the knees. So now he does 50 push-ups a day combination, half leaning and half strict push-up, right? I gave him a supplement called HMB, hydroxymethylbutyrate. Okay, why do athletes love whey protein? It's rich in leucine, one of the branched chain amino acids that builds muscle, leucine, isoleucine, valine. And if you wanted to get muscle building leucine in 600 grams of whey protein, which is a bunch, it's a bucket. There's 60 grams of leucine, 60 grams. So 60 grams would be four little quarter cup measures, right, of the powder. That's what you make protein, and that's respectable. But with HMB, I can take 3 grams of HMB and have just as much muscle building power as 60 grams of pure leucine, which you need 600 grams of a whey protein powder to give you the leucine, because leucine is metabolized to hydroxymethylbutyrate. That is your muscle builder. There's a legal anabolic cheat for anybody out there who wants to maintain muscle mass. I do eat steak. You eat steak. You want to get a little bit more muscle building protein? Load up on 3 to 6 grams of HMB per day. Voila. That's what I put the one uncle on. Hey, my wife's uncle, actually. And after being long COVID, now he's a tall dude. 6'2", he was down to 150 pounds.
Oh.
Okay. He's 185 now.
Good for him.
Yeah. He's a tip I gave him too. I said, hey, when you're walking, Americans don't use their glutes. I'm a Russian kettlebell instructor, right? So I learned from Pavel. And he says, Americans have gluteal amnesia. What? Because you have to use your butt if you swing kettlebells, right? You got to squeeze the glutes. I told Bob, I told the uncle, I let out his name now. He's not going to listen to this show. I told him, I said, I want you to go take a walk with your wife like you've got two bunnies fighting in a sack. Squeeze your glutes. And he said, you know, my butt was sore the first time I took a walk like that. I said, Americans don't use their glutes. And he's got muscle. He's got resilience, right? Because we put that muscle, that was a lot of muscle that we put on. It took us 6 months of exercise and HMB, but he put the muscle on. And, you know, something is going to get all of us. Something is going to get him eventually too, I guess. But you know what? I hope it's 20 years from now and it's not frailty syndrome. Because he feels stronger, he feels better. So there you go. I hope your audience likes that tip.
HMB.
HMB stands for hydroxymethylbutyrate. I've read about what the commies are doing in Canada. They want to get rid of all nutritional supplements. And of course, they want to do that down here in the United States too, yeah. Right? Because look how much value that simple supplement has. Now, combine it with weight-bearing exercise, TRT, and look, muscle mass. Muscle mass is the currency for mobility, strength, resilience, longevity, quality of life. It's crucial.
I'm going to add HMB. I'm going to go to the store tomorrow and get it.
3 to 6 grams a day. Really works well after a workout. You can take some right after a workout because there's no digestion that has to take place. It's direct to muscle building components. So either right after a workout or before bed or for both, 3 grams each time. There you go.
Wow. So when it comes to what people put in their mouths for food, and this should be a regular thing for anybody, you got to eat healthy if you want to, one, not get COVID, get over COVID, or just be healthy in general. What is the number one diet that people should be following?
Well, there's no one diet that I pick, because the biggest culprits that make us unhealthy are flours and sugars.
Yep.
So any diet that dramatically reduces or eliminates flour and sugar, processed food, okay, I'm an advocate of that. And you have the Mediterranean diet. People like that. It's very flavorful. It's very colorful. And they use some grains, but not nearly enough. Ketogenic diets, I like a keto cookbook called Bacon and Butter. There's another one called Primal Cravings, right? And even with keto, and I've done keto, 5 out of 7 meals. Yeah, my two sons make breakfast every Sunday morning, and it's pancakes. Now we'll get healthy grain pancakes, but okay, what am I going to do? Am I going to say no to pancakes? No, I'll eat the pancakes. So I lied. Not every breakfast I have is ketogenic, but so that one, at least we use some paleo grains. And that's the biggest thing. You know what I'll do is I have your email address. I'll email to you a no grain diet that I have. Give it to everybody for free. Okay. Well, you'll see the front picture is just, I mean, it's very simple, but the front picture is how you typically eat. I have a picture of some skewers of beef and some peppers and mushrooms on skewers. So there's the core of your food. Now, for the athletes, especially the endurance athletes, now you can tweak a little bit. And you can have some nutrient-dense starches, small servings of sweet potatoes, because they have a lot of vitamins. Vitamin A is what makes it orange and activates the vitamin D receptor, which is crucial. And a resistant starch. So if you have a sugar molecule that you burn, it's only about this big. You got a starch molecule from carbohydrates, it's a little bit bigger. It just gets broken down to glucose. If you have a resistant starch, it's this long molecule that gets broken down slowly. So it actually provides a steady flow while your body is burning both fats for the ketones and these resistant starches. You can improve your energy endurance. There's a dietitian who's a coach for one of the U.S. Olympic teams, Bob Sebohar, and he talked about how do you make a resistant starch. Cook a batch of rice and beans 50-50, 1-to-1. Don't eat it right after it's cooked. Throw some butter, ghee, coconut oil. You have to have some fats in there. Let it cool for 12 hours. Now, when you eat it, don't reheat it. Let it warm up to room temperature, okay? But don't reheat it. Because what happens during that 12-hour time frame is the starch molecules, the short starch molecules that are in the rice, they start to hook together and they become longer. And voila, about an ice cream scoop size, not much, you don't need a big pile, but an ice cream scoop size, you know, with a nice steak and some vegetables, you know, or carnivore, no vegetables, you can do fine. But, you know, I'm doing fine right now, just carnivore. And I made my steak before I came into this studio.
Nice.
So feel good too.
My favorite, when I was doing carnivore, my favorite, because I have chickens in my backyard. I got 9 chickens. So I'm able to go out and get fresh eggs. I know what I fed the damn things. I know there's nothing weird in them.
Mm-hmm.
But just bacon and eggs, fantastic.
Absolutely. Get some heritage pork. And I love to patronize the local farmers. I encourage everybody, if you have the opportunity to find local farmers that are doing it right, get involved with a co-op. I buy from one that combines farms out of Utah and Reno. It's Alpine Ranch. And we get our beef and our pork from them. We don't eat much poultry, but eggs, a dozen a day in my household.
Yep. If anybody's in Saskatchewan and they want to know, my wife's family is a bunch of ranchers. So her family's got cows all over the place. We know they're eating grass.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want them, slide into my DMs and I'll hook you up with a source for grass fed beef. The other thing you can do is also get yourself a gun and go out and start hunting some stuff.
Other grass fed animals.
It's hunting season right now. I'm a little tired, but I got a freezer full of deer and elk. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Doesn't get any better than that. Okay, I'm going to go through some of these questions that were on this piece of paper that was sent to me. I kind of touched on a few of them already. What are the easiest things people can change to elevate their health?
Well, we mentioned one of the main things that I tell everybody, get flour and sugar out of your diet. Get that out or dramatically eliminate it. And when you start the elimination process, the worst time, if you are going to have carbs and sugar, and it's not like I have zero, the worst time is your first meal of the day. Okay? So try to make your first meal ketogenic. Bacon and eggs. Bacon and nuts. Eggs and nuts. Sausage and nuts. Sausage and eggs. Okay, there you go. Ketogenic breakfast. Who doesn't like that? Right?
Yeah, fantastic.
And here's another tip too. Try not to eat after 6:30 p.m. And why? Because I'm trying to introduce the very beginning of intermittent fasting. Now, intermittent fasting is one of the protocols that physicians recommend for the long COVID people, because when you have a period of fasting, and some people will fast, okay, I'm going to pick 12 hours a day that I eat and 12 that I don't. And then what you do is try to extend, okay, 3 days a week, I'm going to go to 16 hours. I don't eat. Yeah. During that time, when the body senses, oh, I don't have nutrients coming in, I might need to burn up some stuff that's already in my body for energy. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take these, all this junk that's around, and I'm going to burn it. That's called autophagy, right? Your cells suck up bad junk that's around, like spike protein. Or how about this? Other bad cells are like, you know, this cell here, I think we better take it out. We better knock it out because it's going to go senescent. It's going to become sleepy. And that might turn into a cancer cell. So that introduces intermittent fasting. And I tell people, look, if you can't make a dramatic change, I could never go cold turkey and carnivore and right away. Okay, sneak up on it, right? So here you go. Get the starch and sugar out of your diet. Have a ketogenic breakfast. Okay, don't eat after 6:30 p.m. Okay, see if you can make it. Try to extend your fasting period. And then when you do eat, high quality protein is crucial, because the grass-fed beef is the second highest thing on the U.S. Agricultural Nutrient Density Index for protein. We have a thing. What is super dense in nutrients? Grass-fed beef. The only thing that exceeds grass-fed beef on the ANDI by just a hair is grass-fed bison. I mean, come on. So you've got to have it. Chew your food, I tell people. Don't hydrate in between meals, not during a meal. You don't want to dilute your digestive acid by drinking a bunch of fluid. If you need fluid during a meal, drink a tea, drink some bone broth, because there you go. That's another way you're introducing nutrients into your body, some high quality bone broth. And you got to move, right? We're coming up on winter. People say, well, I can't get to the gym. I can't do this. Hey man, you've trained fighting sports. I've never been a professional fighter or anything like that, but you know, you get a lot done with body weight exercises. People say, well, that's just the body weight squat. Okay, tell you what, buddy, why don't you go do 250 of them? Give me 5 sets of 50 body weight squats and tell me if you can't walk a few days later. People underestimate that. They can exercise. So if you move, you get the carbs and sugar out of your diet. And then the obvious ones, the less processed foods, the better. If you can get the most allergenic foods reduced out of your diet, you know, the corn, the soy, stuff like that, you know, you start to make these incremental gains. And I tell people, try this. If you can't go all out and just make the change and say, this is the day I go 100% in, because that means you have to be 100% committed all the time. And I'm not. Like I said, 5 out of 7 is great for me. 5 out of 7 meals. Take one bad thing out of your diet. Robert, I can't do flours and sugar. Okay. Can you take the sugar out of your diet? But add back into me one healthy thing. Go buy your pasture-raised organic eggs. Go buy some grass-fed beef. If you were buying commercial, buy something nutrient. So take out one thing that's bad, add one thing that's good. Okay, a few days later. Okay, now you've gotten, take two out. You've taken out the flour already. Now take out the sugars. Now let's add one other thing. And if you do that one-to-one, you kind of sneak up on it, and all of a sudden what happens? Waistlines start going down. Okay, they start shrinking. Brain function feels better. People exercise a little bit. So the one uncle, remember, I started him on 10 body weight squats a day. He's up to 150 squats a day, 5 days a week. And he does them in sets of 50, 3 sets of 50. You know how much benefit that gives him? Challenge your listeners right now. Body weight squats. Get down all the way. Come up, squeeze your glutes. When you come up, do a little exhale, firm up your glutes and your abs. Okay, try 150 of those like this 83-year-old uncle of mine and tell me how you feel the next day if you're not in really good shape right now. Yeah. It's effective.
Oh, it's tough. You can do a whole lot of stuff with a set of 30-pound dumbbells too, like TRX bands. This stuff's inexpensive. Take $100. So stop buying McDonald's or Burger King for a week. Go out, take that money that you saved, go out and buy your set of resistance bands or a TRX band or something. Stop being lazy.
I know. You know, this is a gift to myself. I asked my wife, she said, what do you want for Christmas? I want, it's called the ISO chain or the ISO max now. I totally underestimated how much time Bruce Lee, 130 pounds and generated unbelievable power, right? I mean, big and strong is one thing, overall growth strength, but power generation, because he was so fast. And a lot of people are familiar with the movements that he did to generate that power, but I really underestimated how much he focused on isometric training. So I'm going to try that. And what is that? It's a stand that I put on. It's the strap and a bar that actually has a load cell in it that'll tell me, well, how much I'm pulling. Like if I do a deadlift, if I do an isometric deadlift, that's not much money. I don't have to put a weight room in my house. I can do that in my living room. I can do it in my bedroom. And that's what I'm going to try. So new method for me. I haven't really done it yet, but I will this winter.
Yeah, give her a shot. Let me know how it goes.
Yeah.
If you like that thing, I'll buy one.
All right. Yeah, I'll let you know. We'll keep in touch by email. I'll chart my results.
That'd be awesome. What is something that people can do that can prevent them from getting COVID?
Well, I'll tell you two things. So we'll pay the bills for one. You know, the wellness company that's sponsoring me. Wellness company has now on their website two different kits that people can purchase for emergency preparedness. Let's say you can't get to a doctor, the power's out, you don't even have time for a telemed consult. There's what we call the medical emergency kit, which is six antibiotics and two other drugs, one for nausea and one for a fungus. And we actually do have a COVID kit because what is crucial, if you get COVID or COVID similar virus, early treatment is key. And in that kit, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, budesonide, and those are the things. So be prepared is number one. But if I were to pick one thing, okay, if you can't get out in the sunshine, because I think you guys in up north get a little bit colder than we do here in Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
Up in the Great White North.
Yeah,
right?
It's cold.
So supplement with vitamin D. Now, you got to supplement with enough. I always recommend taking it with K2 if you can, because that helps prevent calcification of your arteries, right? So in the early days of COVID, we found that people who had a healthy level of vitamin D, now healthy according to the Harvard School of Public Health, when you measure it by the blood, it's 25 hydroxy vitamin D, is a level between 70 and 90. These people had the lowest risk of getting COVID. If they happen to get COVID, they didn't get severe disease, unlike people who had low vitamin D who might end up in the hospital. And if they happen to end up in the hospital, they had a much higher survival rate. It's all related to how much vitamin D. Now, some of the studies had patients supplement on 5,000 units a day, but if you're already low in vitamin D, some people benefit from 10,000 a day or more. Talk to a doctor about it, because if you got out in the sun in a bikini, Caucasian skin is going to make 137 units per square inch per hour. So if you do a sun bath, 20 minutes per side, you just made 100,000 units of vitamin D. Wow. So when people say, well, that's a really high dose, well, there's European studies that show if you take 150,000 units of vitamin D per day for 3 days, it's actually more effective against upper respiratory tract infections than some antibiotics, the most commonly prescribed ones like azithromycin. So get your vitamin D up. There's sun lamps that you can buy that'll actually, not necessarily meant for tanning, but you will get a tan because creating it in the skin is ideal. Activate the vitamin D receptor with two other key nutrients, vitamin A, sweet potatoes, carrots, apricots. That's where you get vitamin A. The other is magnesium. Everybody needs the supplement with magnesium, especially athletes. And I noticed this too. When I turned 40, I realized I wasn't 25. I developed, I read somebody's recommendation to do an Epsom salt bath soak. It's magnesium sulfate. You get magnesium across the skin, you feel so much better because magnesium helps keep your muscles pliable and supple. And here's nature's number one food source of magnesium. Organic roasted pumpkin seeds. There's 500 milligrams in 4 ounces of pumpkin seeds, which is a big handful. And a guy your size, I'd recommend get 1,000 milligrams of magnesium per day in your body one way or another. And don't forget to eat that grass-fed beef, man. Lots of nutrients in there.
Grass-fed beef, grass-fed deer, vitamin D. So last question I got for you. We're in Canada. Well, I'm in Canada. You're in Vegas. But up in Canada, we can't get ivermectin. Our communist dictator leader, Justin Trudeau, has made it very hard for us. Like, if you want to get ivermectin, you got to do some shady stuff, jump on the black web and rob a few people. So is there something in Canada that we can use that would do the same thing?
As long as your communist government hasn't taken away every nutritional supplement and you can get access to Artemisia, or Artemisium, or wormwood, also known as sweet wormwood. So those are three different names for essentially the same thing. That's the most natural way that you can get something like ivermectin. Okay, that's the most natural way. I hope you can get hydroxychloroquine, but if you can't, I'll give you kind of like the, you know, the kitchen chemist's way to get hydroxychloroquine. You can look up recipes for boiling orange peels and lemon peels to get some of the hydroxychloroquine, or go get tonic water. Good old-fashioned tonic water has quinine in it. Quinine is the precursor for chloroquine, which was a drug that was introduced before hydroxychloroquine. Hydroxychloroquine is just the most potent out of those three. But it's an old hiker's trick. Why is it a hiker's trick? You drink tonic water when you go on a hike and you take your minerals like magnesium and potassium and you don't get cramps. Why? Because the quinine helps those minerals get into the body's cells. So drink 8 ounces of tonic water. I make recommendations. I'm not a doctor. I don't diagnose. I don't prescribe. I make recommendations. So my recommendations, which you asked me for, is 8 ounces of tonic water, 2 or 3 times a day with zinc. For men, you know, if you're sick, you do at least 25, if not 50 milligrams, each one of those 2 or 3 doses. You know, you're getting too much zinc if you get some loose stool. That's when you back off. Women don't quite need as much. And other than that, you know, those are your cheap ways to get kind of the antiviral effects. But there's other things that work too. I mean, gosh, the wellness company has an elderberry product that's immune boosting. Vitamin C is immune boosting. But since you asked about ivermectin, your ivermectin alternative is the Artemisia sweet wormwood. Okay. And your hydroxychloroquine alternative would be your quinine and zinc. You already got the vitamin D dosing. I already mentioned it. Hey, if you want to go with a high dose, I recommend it to other people. And there's literature on that. You can look it up. High dose vitamin D for upper respiratory tract infections, viral infections, and high dose for a short period of time. So there you go. I hope that's helpful.
That is very helpful. I will get you out of here. I'm sure you've got other things you need to do today. I don't know what time it is in Vegas, but it's got to be getting late there too.
7:15, it's time to go home for book duty.
Well, I thank you for your time today, Dr. Seek. It's been fantastic talking to you, and hopefully we can stay in touch. And I would really appreciate that diet.
I'll send it to you. You know what else I'm going to send you? I told you before we went on the show, right? I was Shumanov's strength and conditioning coach.
Yep.
I'll send you the regimen we used.
Awesome. I would love that. I'll do that this winter.
Okay. All right.
Perfect. Thank you very much, sir. And have a good evening.
Okay. You too. Thanks again.